It's a sad irony. When times get tough, more people turn to agencies which can help them get through those tough times. But during those times, the agencies themselves are suffering, struggling to pay their bills. Right now, there is probably no better example of this than what is happening at food banks and food pantries around Central Ohio. Welcome to Open Line. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Fred Anderle today. Here are some stats just to lead this off. Demand from the Mid-Ohio Food Bank is up 14% from last year and 77% from 10 years ago. All the while, food inflation is at a 17-year high. Spaghetti is up 98%. Canned corn is up 33%. And those are the numbers our guests look at every day. Joining us here on Open Line are four panelists, I work on this issue every day. The Director of Food Pantry Services for Lutheran Social Services, Barb Packer. Welcome, Barb.
Hi, Mike.
Okay. Scott Merrier, who directs the Westerville Food Pantry. Scott, welcome.
Morning, Mike. Thank you.
Thanks for being here. The President of the Mid-Ohio Food Bank, Matt Habash.
Morning.
Good morning. And the Director of the Ohio Association of Second Harvest Food Banks, Lisa Hamler-Fugit. Lisa, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. We welcome your comments. If you have struggled to afford food, if you're struggling to afford food and want to share your story, we'd love to hear from you as well. We'll lay some groundwork here in the first few minutes, and then we'll take to your phone calls. Call us at 292-8513. I have too many phone numbers in my life. 292-8513, or you can email us at openline@wosu.org. Barb, we'll start with you.
Okay.
Tell us how your customers or the people you serve, how the faces have changed over the past couple of years. Are you seeing different people?
Well, I think we're seeing a new level of poverty in the working poor. Many of our families, probably in the neighborhood of about 46% of our families, actually work. They don't have enough to make ends meet by the end of the month, and food is that one variable that they can cut back on. Obviously, not the best one to cut back on, but certainly in order that they can keep current on bills and rent, and of course, transportation now is even mm-hmm. more of a challenge for many of our families and ourselves, actually. So that face is changing, and the number of senior citizens who need assistance, who are helping to raise grandchildren and in many cases great-grandchildren with the Social Security or a small pension, it's just becoming very difficult for them to make ends meet pharmaceuticals and hospitalization and those types of issues. So that face is changing, that they're a stronger call for help and assistance in those two areas.
Scott Merrier, you're in Westerville. Considered a more affluent part of the area. Mm-hmm. We have read and we have seen that food pantries in places like Westerville and Dublin and some of those areas are getting busier.
That's absolutely true. Over 26% of the children that attend Westerville schools participate in federally supported feeding programs, after-school snack, free breakfast, reduced lunch or free lunch programs. That's more than one in four kids in our school district, which typically you wouldn't think about in a suburban area like Westerville. So what's happening is poverty maybe 10 years ago was much more neighborhood-centric. You could put a center in a geographic spot and have a much larger impact. Today it's much more mobile. People are migrating to the suburbs to look for jobs, to be close because of transportation issues. Now with the price of gas, they need to be in close proximity. They're looking for better schools. And they're looking for more affordable housing, and so they'll go anywhere. Mm-hmm. It's very, very mobile. They'll go anywhere to be able to do that. And so we're seeing poverty shifting in its concentration levels, and it's migrating to suburbs.
It's also migrating up the economic ladder because of gas prices and the foreclosure issues and things like that.
Absolutely. We're seeing the same trends that Barb sees in some of the urban areas, and that is the working poor continues to grow. Similar to Barb's findings, half of our clients are working poor. They are employed in some way and mm-hmm. still have more month than they
had. Okay, 292-8513, if you'd like to join in our conversation here on Open Line on WOSU. Matt Habash, the president of the Mid-Ohio Food Bank. The food pantries come to you all to help fill their shelves. you're seeing what's going on there? What is your demand saying?
Demand's up 14%. I think it just about to show with which is a huge increase again because it was up 10% the year before that. So I mean we're continuing to see an increase. And we serve a 20-county area, so we cover about a quarter of the state, and you see the same situation throughout all the areas. In fact, in some cases, the rural communities are getting hit even harder. I mean, when you look at the disproportionate effect that rising fuel prices has on somebody that lives in a rural area where they have to drive further to get to any kind of service, it has a big impact. So we're continuing to see the increases. I've been doing this for 24 years. This is an all-time high. So it's the only good news out of this picture is we actually distributed more food last year than we ever have. So as hard as it is to find the food with the rising fuel prices, we have been able to continue to bring in food from all over the country and are trying to make that available to these fabulous agencies that do tremendous work every day.
Lisa Hamler-Fugit. It's the same story around the state?
Absolutely. Hunger exists in all 88 counties, and I would say that Ohio is really facing an extraordinary crisis. The emergency food providers are just being inundated by more people who, just as Barb said, there's just not enough money left at the end of the month, and certainly with massive wage stagnation, more service sector jobs, we're seeing people whose maybe scheduled for 40 hours a week. If the sales aren't there, they're being sent home. I think it's food, it's fuel, it's utility cost, it's housing cost, and wages just are not keeping pace.
292-8513, 292-8513, if you'd like to join in our discussion. Let's start with some context. Matt Habash, how does it work? Where do you get your food, and how do you go about distributing it to clients into food pantries and food banks around the area?
The sources of our food are pretty straightforward. Food banking got started really to capture the excess from the food industry. And if you did pure food banking, that's all you would do is capture the surplus. We're about 52% of the product that we handle every year is donations from the food industry itself. The other sources of food, the government, the Farm Bill was very important to us. Everybody wanted to talk about the subsidies. The other side of that was the nutrition title, which we hadn't had an increase in our government commodity program in, I think, 11 years. And we finally have gotten an increase in that will really start bringing food in October. It'll be the beginning of that. So that is a big source from the federal government. The state of Ohio has been a wonderful partner with us, not only with giving us money to buy food, the staple canned goods and things, but a terrific partnership with the farmers. I mean, we have brought in more and more and more produce, which is a healthy food for us, for everybody to give out. It's the healthiest things that we can give out. But that's a challenge for the food pantries when you do that because they're not, most food pantries are not equipped, to handle large volumes of produce. It's a very perishable item.
Yeah.
So that's a challenge there. And finally, the community support in all this is Operation Feed. And we have one of the largest food drives in the country. And that really gives the community the opportunity to participate clear down to, I've had numerous little kids. We started a kids pack program and little kids bringing in food that they've gone and used their piggy bank money for, their garage sale money, and they're making donations with that.
What percentage of your food is supplied through Operation Feed?
It varies. It's about 11% of the total in terms of that. But we also use that to subsidize all of the agencies so that they can have their own granting process, pick and choose, discount the foods that we bring in, the purchase foods. We do a lot of buying of foods that we don't get in. So we discount that by 50% to the agencies.
And even though you buy in bulk, you're seeing increases in your prices.
The tremendous increases. Even in the federal food, I think that was the story recently was the fact that while we were ordering the new money that came in for the Farm Bill, we thought we were $5,000 under a $400,000 order. We find out we're $31,000 over the next day. The price of peanut butter went up $6,000 a truck while we were ordering. So we had to make adjustments, and we ended up wiping out a semi-load of spaghetti and spaghetti sauce just because of that change in price.
So those rapid price increases don't just happen at the pump as you're driving to and from work. You see a jump 20 cents a gallon. 292-8513, 292-8513. Now, Barb, how do you get your food that you then distribute to your clients?
Well, obviously, Mid-Ohio Food Bank is our first choice of purchase and food to receive. We get a discounted rate from Mid-Ohio, and they certainly do a great job of trying to provide the food that we need. But we're all choice food pantries at Lutheran Pantry, and our families are allowed to shop through, and they make selections for their own families rather than just receiving a bag of groceries and here's what we have today and so on. We try to work with the USDA food pyramid and making sure that the food they walk out with is a healthy, balanced food. And so we do some things. We combine with some other food pantries to make group purchases. We go out and we work with different wholesalers. We bring food in also from as far away as California on a regular basis, where we can negotiate some great prices in order to offer a greater variety of food for the families to select from. We get a lot of our food donated from congregations and businesses and individuals also. So, you know, we have a myriad of sources from Mid Ohio Food Bank clear through to manufacturers and wholesalers and the private sector also. So we have a variety of things that we can pull from.
Scott Merrier from the Westerville Food Bank, is that similar to how your operation works?
It is. We're a smaller scale than all of Lutheran Social Services. But, again, we offer a choice pantry as well and have made a commitment to provide certain staples to the clients that we serve. And so we will go to the ends of the earth to source that those items.
That's right.
Certainly, Mid-Ohio is a primary supplier for us, and we purchase from them, but we also procure our own food through local purchasing as well as food drives. On the 4th of July, we had a community food drive in the Westerville Community Parade sponsored by the Rotary Club. Mm. And along the parade route, we collected enough to feed 80 families for
wow.
a week.
That's
I mean,
terrific.
We'll do just about anything to identify new sources of food that we can redistribute to people in need. We purchase about 35 or 40% of the food that we distribute, and we raise or collect through individual food drives, corporate food drives, congregational food drives, community food drives, individuals just dropping off donations in order to be able to meet the demand that we have. If we had to pay for all that food, we would certainly, particularly at the rising prices of food,
sure.
not be able to serve but a fraction of the people that we serve today.
Mike, I think it's real important that that all the listeners realize that. I mean, a lot of people think the food bank provides all the food.
Yeah.
We provide about 80% of the food to the 500 charities. So all of these other activities that go on are real important. You know, when you have people making donations, when you have people doing food drives, when you have people paying attention in their church congregations, in their businesses, et cetera, it's really important to realize.
Right.
We try to localize as much of that as possible. So, you know, some companies give direct to people in our outlying areas. You know, there's all kinds of relationships there. So in that aggregate, we provide about 80%, but that other 20% is absolutely critical for a lot of the agencies.
Okay, 292-8513, 292-8513. We're talking to a panel of social service providers. Their specialty is providing food to the hungry, food to financially struggling people who need a little extra help, especially in these tough economic times. Lisa Hamler-Fugit, are food banks getting more creative as to how they're going about getting the food sources?
Absolutely, Mike. We represent the 12 Second Harvest Food Banks, and those 12 Second Harvest Food Banks provide food and grocery items to some 3,300 member charities. And it's not just food. I need to say that one of the greatest demands right now are for personal care, personal hygiene, and household cleaning items.
Toothpaste, things like that.
Absolutely. People do not realize that you cannot use your food stamps to purchase those items. They are going up just as quickly. We work with, as Matt said, Ohio farmers, growers, and commodity producers to clear their surplus and unmarketable agricultural products. We, too, have a purchase program. Our state is extremely generous. That $8.5 million a year provides about 25% of the food that is then distributed to the food banks. It is a partnership. It is creativity at its finest. We have some of the most resourceful people who are doing this work, but it is a partnership. It takes all of us, individuals, corporations, foundations, and certainly our governments at the local, state, and federal level.
Okay, let's go to the phones. John, you're on open line with our panel of social service providers from food banks around the area. Go ahead, John.
Thank you. In Union County, where I live, it seems to me like the poverty or the homelessness problem is considered to be, well, that's a Columbus problem. But what I'm seeing in Union County is you have people that work at gas stations or fast food restaurants who are, for all intents and purposes, homeless. The only reason they're not is because they're staying with two or three people. If one of them should lose their job, all three will be homeless. So it seems like homelessness is taking on a different face in the rural areas.
It's true. It's a good point. I was speaking with the Second Harvest Food Bank of Southeastern Ohio yesterday, and one of the things that they have seen where families are combining their housing because of limited incomes, that the number of people per household has gone up remarkably. We're looking at eight people per household now, where you'll find multiple generations living under that roof, just to try to conserve what little income that they have and stretch those resources.
And you hear a lot of that with immigrants who are coming in, recent immigrants. A lot of apartments are being shared by, you know, 6-10 people sometimes.
Well, I think Lisa talked earlier about wage stagnation, and I think that's a big issue here. And this, you know, throughout, you know, I know throughout the 20 county area, we see that all the time, where people are beginning to figure out ways to pull resources. I mean, there are limited jobs out there. The wage scales that people are making, they cannot make ends meet. When you throw health care costs and some of that's not being provided by employers as much anymore. You know, all of those things are adding up to people having to make very difficult choices. So for all the service workers, I mean, I think both Barb and Scott mentioned the fact, and our study bears that out every time, that, you know, over 40% of the people we're helping are working, playing by all the rules, but still having to use food pantries to get by. It wasn't designed to do that.
I mean, that has to be tough for someone who is working, you know, 40, maybe even more than 40 hours a week, has never really come to a food pantry or relied on the help of one of these organizations before to make that step and come in and say, look, you know, I need some help getting some food for my family.
I think it's difficult for anybody. Most all of us want to provide for our families, and we have a certain amount of self-respect and dignity. And it's an area where our volunteers share a lot of tears with the families who come in. They've never had to experience this before. They've always taken care of their family, and now all of a sudden they find themselves in a position where they have to ask for help. And I think as human beings, that's difficult for us. Most everyone wants to provide. And it's great that we have volunteers who are so sensitive when our families do come in, that we do provide a kind area, an understanding ear, and sometimes just a smile and a hug to say, it's not going to be this way forever. We're here to help however we can, and I think that's important. And we certainly, I think all of us could use any volunteer that wants to, hears the call to feed the hungry. This is your opportunity to help, because the need is up, and we need kind, warm, generous people to help us.
How about outreach to get to those people who are reluctant, who might need the help? Do you have the staff and the resources to even take that on?
We have started a new program in 2006, a public-private partnership with the Governor's Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives and Ohio Department of Job and Family Services, our food banks, and our member charities, on a program called the Ohio Benefit Bank. And it allows folks, they can go to the website and take 90 seconds to do a quick check to determine what work support programs, such as food stamps or child care, that they may be eligible for. It's an opportunity to get additional resources, as I said, work support programs to help them make ends meet. We now have over 600 agencies across the state who have trained counselors who can assist clients in completing applications and then navigating the system. For the new poor, they don't have any idea where to go to look for resources.
What is that website?
The website is www.obb.ohio.gov, the Ohio Benefit Bank.
And we will get that up on our website, wosu.org/openline. We don't have it up there right now, we'll get it up there soon after this hour discussion is done. Let's go to Peggy. Peggy, you're on the air.
Hi. I wondered if your panelists would address the rules and regulations for what can be donated by private citizens and congregations. It seems that often we have excess in our freezers or home canned goods and home-baked things that maybe don't meet the qualifications they need.
How can somebody help? I mean, we always hear the non-perishable foods and things like that.
We're always open for non-perishable foods. if there's something that has been frozen or refrigerated, obviously knowing the history of where it's been and how long it's been held and those types of things are going to be important. Each of us, too, has extensive screening processes in place to verify and make sure that the food is in usable condition is in good and is safe. So I would just encourage you to contact your local food pantry or Mid-Ohio for any handling procedures. But typically we can walk through those guidelines individually with groups.
Well, the food bank really requests that all the agencies abide by safe handling. We put a training program together to run everybody through from the pantry level. They do their own work as well. Probably the one issue beyond frozen and items that may have been refrigerated, items that are opened, have been opened, you know, those kind of things are things that we're not going to take. The other is home canned items. And we abide by all the labeling laws. And so yeah. We're real sensitive to the fact that people have a lot of food allergies, need to understand what's in every product that we give out. So when you get home canned items, you don't have that information. You don't know how that's been done and processed. So that's probably the biggest one that we tell people cannot do. And most of our – I think everybody abides by that pretty much.
Right. Sure.
Has there been any thought to lowering the standards a little bit as far as expiration dates or is that still too dangerous to do?
Expiration date is an interesting topic, and we have reams and reams of paper on what each company says about each product. They will tell us, in that, you know, we can contact any food company, and they'll tell us how long. A lot of that stuff is a best use by date. So even people get real nervous, and they see, think, you know, the food goes bad the day of that, you know, the best use by date. That's really not the case. It really is how the product is handled, and on any other packaged good or canned good, we know the life of the product, and we tell the agencies this is how long. There are some. You know, baby formula is one that people are real cautious about. So, you know, the expiration date is the expiration date. Do not pass out the product after that date. But beyond that, I think pretty much most of it is we really work with all the national manufacturers to understand their limits on their food, abide by whatever rules they set. And oftentimes they set as making donations. They'll tell us you can distribute this for a month, for 3 months, you know, whatever type of thing. So each product is different, and we keep that and try to give that information out to all of our agencies so that they can, as Scott mentioned, I think it's real important that the agencies, as they're accepting donations, they understand you know, the right questions to ask. The history of the product is a really interesting issue because you get into all kinds of challenges, particularly when people bring prepared foods. You had a picnic, and the potato salad's been sitting out all day. Collecting that and taking that to a soup kitchen is probably not the best thing to do with that particular product.
Go ahead,
Well,
Scott.
I think the other thing is we're working to build people's dignity and hope and self-esteem. And they're consumers as well. Our clients are just like you and I. They're consumers. They're wise consumers. They read labels. They look at things, and they're going to do the best thing that's important for them and their families. And so we are very sensitive to things like product dating and codes and those types of things because we use a simple rule of thumb. If I wouldn't serve it to my family, then why would I give it to someone else? This idea that, well, they're poor, they'll take anything, it's just really a poor image of what we're trying to do in helping people gain self-sufficiency.
But on the other hand, it must be frustrating to see food that probably is okay to be thrown away and to more or less be wasted. So you have to balance the two sides of that.
That's right.
292-8513, 292-8513, or you can email a question or comment to our panel at openline@wosu.org. We're going to take a break, and we'll return and continue our discussion about the state of food pantries and food banks around Central Ohio and the state of Ohio. This is Open Line on WOSU 820, NPR News.
I'm Terry Gross from Fresh Air. Each week we bring you interviews with some of the most interesting people in the arts, pop culture, and politics. Okay, I'm not Terry. You know that because you know that there's no imitating one of the truly unique voices on the air. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air will be here later this afternoon. It begins at 1 o'clock. And on Fresh Air, Terry Gross talks with the co-writer and director of the new animated film, WALL-E. That's coming up on Fresh Air at 1 o'clock. Good morning. I'm Amy Jurevich. It is 75 degrees at 10:30. Thanks for joining us for Open Line this morning. The switch to digital TV is coming. You can help older adults with the switch by donating your unneeded converter box coupons to WOSU Public Media. Visit wosu.org/DTV for your coupons today. Or call 292- 9678 for more information. And on your drive home, catch up on the day's events and business news with All Things Considered and Marketplace. Now on WOSU 89.7 FM, weekdays from 4 until 7 o'clock. In the weather forecast for today, a beautiful day, sunny skies and a high of 84. Partly cloudy tonight and a low around 63. For Friday, sunny skies and a high near 89. And sunny on Saturday as well, with a high around 91. And now, back to Open Line.
Welcome back to Open Line. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Fred Anderle on this Thursday. Let's reset our panel here. We're discussing food pantries and food banks and the rising demand and their rising cost in this hour of Open Line. Barb Packer, she is the Director of Food Pantry Services for Lutheran Social Services. Scott Merrier directs the Westerville Food Pantry. Matt Habash is President of the Mid-Ohio Food Bank. And Lisa Hamler-Fugia, the Executive Director of the Association of Second Harvest Food Banks here in Ohio. 292-8513, if you would like to call and share your story or discuss this situation, have any suggestions on how we can help feed the growing number of hungry people here in Central Ohio. We mentioned donations from supermarkets and things like that, but that's declined because of their improving efficiencies around the state.
National and local food donations that, as Matt said, that have historically supplemented the contributions from our governmental sources have declined. We have more secondary markets where manufacturers are now selling that product off, and that business model has certainly hurt us. But from individuals to corporations to food manufacturers, I think the bottom line is food's not free.
Yeah. Right.
Somebody has to pay for it, and those recent trends have certainly impacted our availability to get those products.
292-8513 if you'd like to join in the discussion. The foreclosure crisis, and even folks who have not been foreclosed upon, many of the so-called subprime borrowers have seen their mortgages adjust up. And they may be still surviving in their home, but they're paying an extra $200, $300, $400 a month for their mortgage. And you must be seeing the effects of that.
And the other side of that that's come to light recently is as many of the foreclosures through apartment buildings and so on, many of our families who rent are finding themselves out on the streets because the loan has been foreclosed upon the landlord.
Mm-hmm.
And this has just come to light in the last few months. More and more we hear of families in those same situations. So while they're paying their rent and trying to keep current with all of their expenses, the landlord may not be. And so they find themselves in need of food assistance or need of a roof over their head. So that's another aspect that I don't think we've thought of until it's come to light recently.
And then we saw the headline in the newspaper today, bankruptcies are up 17%, even as the law is tighter now and how you can declare for bankruptcy. So, is this comparable? Matt, you mentioned it's the worst you've seen in 24 years. Is it comparable to anything we've seen like the recession in 2001 or the recession in the early 90s?
We call this the perfect storm, unfortunately, because you didn't have rising fuel prices at that level back then. You didn't have rising food prices. And I think those are the basics that people see and feel every day. You couple that with the rising cost of housing and the changes in the housing market. At the end of the day, this all trickles down to food pantries. I mean, as Barb mentioned, what you tell somebody when you're counseling somebody through these is try to make sure you pay your pay your rent, pay your mortgage, make sure that keep your utilities on. Those are much harder. They need if you lose your house, or you get evicted from an apartment, it is much harder for any social service agency to help you there because it takes a lot of cash to make that happen. So as a result, food is the one, as Barb mentioned, food is the one item in that all the basics that you need that's the most variable that you can go get somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that's what the impact on pantries, and I think that we're seeing throughout our service area. With a lot of senior citizens, it's a choice between the drugstore and the grocery store. That is not just a nice, neat cliche. I mean, that is a real thing. We see that over and over again, and we do a hunger study every 4 years, and that comes out as one of the biggest issues with the seniors. And seniors represent anywhere from 10 to 15% of the folks we're helping throughout the state of Ohio, depending on as you go around the state. So those are big issues for folks that we're all facing right now.
It's not just it's also that you're making choices whether to buy food or not to buy food, but the type of food you're buying. You tend to buy cheaper food, which is obviously in most cases is less healthy than the good stuff.
And it could certainly have long-term health consequences. Right. A recent study came out this week about the high rates of diabetes in the Appalachian region. Here again, you have got to have access to healthy foods, the right foods, in order to control these diet-related diseases. What's different about now than the recession of early 2000 or prior recessions is that working people who were once in a position to donate, either through Fair Share, who were providing support to local food pantries or soup kitchens, now find themselves standing in the very lines asking for help.
Mm-hmm. I think the other big change is healthcare costs, too. I mean, mm-hmm. overall, when you look at, I mean, from back in 2000 and that, you know, you have a disproportionate, I mean, they say 5%. It's a drop of 5% a year in corporate America getting out of funding health care. I mean, we're going to be changing that entire pay system. That doesn't include the fact that they're asking you to pay more and more and more as an employee, or the benefits are going down. So those costs are all coming into, you know, you're having to pay out of pocket. And so as a result, all of these things come together, which that's why I said I've never seen it like this, because there are so many ways that people are getting hit, you know, that ultimately it's a very difficult time for people.
We have been relatively lucky over the past, you know, 10 to 15 years as far as food inflation. Scott, we see 17% this year, but it was pretty low for a while, correct?
It was fairly stable, but all of us in the food business know that the price of food has been rising over the past 3 or 4 years at the same rate or higher rate as fuel has. Most people don't recognize that because grocery stores don't advertise the price of, you know, the price of beans on a sign that you drive by every day, where with self-service gas, we all, you know, see it at the pump, but it's only the person who's going to the grocery store that always sees that. But take $100 a couple years ago and take $100 today, and the number of bags of food that you're going to walk out of any retail grocery store is significantly different, and we all know that. So
then if you look at the containers of the food,
right, they've
shrunk a little bit.
Yes, very much so.
The price has gone up, and the number of ounces in that tub of ice cream have gone down. A pound of coffee isn't a pound of coffee anymore.
No, you get the 12-ounce version of the pound of coffee. But, you know, a year ago, I was able to feed a family of four with a $20 donation. Mm-hmm. By the end of this year, that number went to $24. And I'm anticipating with this year's fiscal budget, we're looking at about $27 to $28 in order to feed a family of four. So, you know, it's that's doing everything we can possibly do to keep the costs down. And, you know, as our listeners decide to donate, you know, people ask the question, should I donate food items or should I donate dollars? Certainly, that's a personal choice, and all of us sitting here would welcome any donation. Mm-hmm. With the dollar donation, however, most all of us can use and make that dollar go further than actually buying a box of cereal. A box of cereal, I think, is running about $4.50 or $5 a box now in the grocery. Mm-hmm. We can take that $5 and we can buy in the neighborhood of about 28 to 30 pounds of food with that.
Wow. You can buy in bulk. You have purchasing
correct.
Power. You have relationships with
right.
organizations. And that you can buy from the government, right. things like that.
But those people who feel the need to bring that box of cereal in, bring that box of cereal in
absolutely.
Wherever it is, because we're still feeding people, and that is very important. So it's a personal choice there, but it's a very important personal choice.
Last year at the association, we had a 15% increase in food cost, and in budgeting for the future year on our state-funded programs, we're anticipating a 26% increase, and that's buying directly from farmers, growers, and commodity producers. And the single most significant cost to them, especially in the area of livestock, is feed cost, and you see that across the board. Certainly, we distribute an awful lot of chicken and eggs, and our cost just over an 11-month period, we saw a 20 cent increase per pound in chicken, and over 34% increase just in the cost of eggs.
292-8513 to call us here at WOSU. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Fred Angeli. Today on Open Line, we're talking about the struggling economy and how it's affecting people looking for food and how it's affecting food banks and food pantries who try to help out those people. we all have the food drives, Thanksgiving to Christmas. This is a time of year where those slow down, I assume. People are on vacation. They're not thinking, collecting cans and cereal or money for food banks and food pantries.
It's one of the reasons that we run Operation Feed in the time period that we do, because everybody collects. Most charities do most of their fundraising. It almost tracks very well with retail sales and the store for the holidays. It's the same time period. Mm-hmm. So we run the food drive during this time. But your point, I think, is a real good one in the sense that what happens in the summertime, mm-hmm. most people think that our busiest months are the winter months. Yeah. And in reality, what you see is because the kids are not getting free lunch and breakfast in the summertime, that they're hitting. You go to a soup kitchen in the summertime, you see a totally different population mm-hmm. than you would see most of the time when you go to a soup kitchen. The pantries are getting hit harder. The families are struggling more. And then that feeds right into September when, basically anybody going back to school has the same expenses that everybody else does yep. in just trying to get the children back into school. So that carries on through September as well. So, it's a summertime, and these 3 or 4 months are a challenging time. It's also a challenging time for agencies, and I know at the food bank in terms, we use a lot of volunteers. We have 5,000 people put in about 25,000 hours of volunteer time.
Wow.
Everybody goes, holidays, they're not there, vacations, everything else. You start to see that decline. We still have a steady supply of food coming in that needs to be yeah. worked during those times. So we're always encouraging people who want to donate and volunteer mm-hmm. During the holidays to say, how about taking an IOU and coming in June, July, and August yes. to really help, because that's when we have the biggest need for volunteers.
Okay, 292-8513. Or you can email a question to us, a question to our panel, or a comment to our panel at openline@wosu.org. Scott Marriott, you mentioned that 1 in 4 in the Westerville School District is using those. 1 in 4 of the kids
are
qualifying and mm-hmm. participating in the school lunch. And that is a big push. I know a lot of the recreation programs try to target those kids, but it must be an effort on your part as well.
Well, that's true. And as Matt said, the usage, home usage goes up because kids aren't eating at school. So mm-hmm. the demand in local pantries increases as well because people are looking for additional feeding items or the pressure that they experience there. So it's part of it is an educational process and an awareness, because we don't typically think that we would see that in Westerville in a suburban location like that. And that's amplified in Dublin and Hilliard and Pickerington, as well as in the urban areas of inner city Columbus. We talked about the remote areas as well, the outlying counties. I have friends that work in those areas, and they also face that unique pressure because, fortunately, we just saw this morning's paper as well, the census data of Central Ohio is growing. Mm-hmm. Columbus is one of the cities that's growing, but most of those outlying counties with jobs leaving and economies sagging are their provision is even scarcer. Are you seeing that, Matt?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go to Pat. Pat, you're on the air on WOSU's open line.
Hi. I have a question about locally, like somebody's backyard garden. I've heard people say, "Oh, plant a row for the pantries." I must confess, I haven't done it, but I may wind up with a few more zucchini than I could eat. So, is there an outlet, or is there one? I mean, do I research my local food pantry, or would somebody do that?
Pat, if you call the Mid-Ohio Food Bank, we will direct you to the closest pantry in your neighborhood so you don't have to drive very far to make that donation. But we really encourage people to do that. One of the things that I think is coming out of all of this change that's going on is you're starting to see more and more people grow their own food. And as a result of that, we're seeing those kind of donations. More and more community gardens are cropping up. More and more farms in some of the outlying areas are starting. But if locally, if you plant a row for the hungry, and there is a program, and that is actually the name of it, we strongly encourage you to donate it to your local pantry. And if you call Mid-Ohio Food Bank at 274-7770, we will connect you to the local pantry.
Okay. So you'll take tomatoes?
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Pat.
Tomatoes and zucchini.
Yeah, we'll take all those.
Whatever. I learned the other day that the average tomato plant produces, a good plant will produce 25 pounds of tomatoes. So with every
–
it's a lot of ketchup, but that's also a lot of nutrition. So any of the food pantries would welcome any of those donations.
Because we planted tomato plants in my backyard. My wife just this morning was saying, what are we going to do with all of our tomatoes that we have?
Bring it on down, Mike.
We'll find out where to put them. Yes. 292-8513, 292-8513. Dan, you're on the air on Open Line on WOSU.
Hello.
Go ahead, Dan. You're on the air.
Yes, just a comment and a question. Has there ever been a movement to try to involve the farmers and maybe their fallow land in this kind of organization. Possibly if they could donate some land and then they could get volunteers or the people who are having a hard time maybe to learn a skill and maybe be more self-sufficient, learn how to farm, or they could recruit them on their farms to actually do work.
There, as a matter of fact, there the Akron-Canton Regional Food Bank has a partnership where they are farming over 20 acres with the diocese, and that food is donated. There are partnerships with local sheriffs and prison facilities where food is being grown and donated. Again, Ohio is unique. We have had a 10-year partnership with Ohio farmers, growers, and commodity producers to clear their surplus and unmarketable agricultural products, where we pay their picking, packing, processing, and production costs for some of the most wholesome food. There's also work that's being done now by the Ohio Food Policy Task Force to look at how we can develop new sources of food for emergency feeders, as well as developing new jobs. And we are an agricultural state, and reintroducing agriculture as a viable option for the new jobs. I want to say again, and this Scott brought this up, hunger is really a symptom of poverty. Mm-hmm. And Ohio is gripped now with quite a poverty crisis. Some 3.4 million Ohioans are now living in households with incomes at or below 200% who are struggling every day. So we are looking at not only how do we get food into our organizations, but how do we find jobs that are going to pay livable wages so people can feed themselves through normal channels.
Farmers have stated quite often that they can't recruit people to work in their orchards or in their fields and that sort of thing. I just thought maybe people who are down on their luck and were looking for jobs, if they were exposed to maybe that kind of field, maybe they might be interested in actually, you know, that would be an opportunity or an option they might consider as far as employment. You know, and then we wouldn't have to worry about recruiting all the illegal immigrants in our country.
I think there's a possibility you're going to see more and more and more people get back to farming. As the price of food goes up, as people begin to look at – we had a suggestion from one of our donors the other day to go see if we could get our hands on all of the leftover crop or the leftover plants that the garden centers had and get those and donate those to food pantries who could give them out to people so that they could grow their tomatoes in their backyard. I think you're going to see more of that. I think we also going to need to be conscious of the fact that most farms are in rural areas and driving to and from farms is very expensive with fuel costs these days. And if the prediction from a few weeks ago says $7 a gallon by 2010, we're all going to be looking to do things differently. So
right.
I think farming is going to come back. This is an agricultural state, as Lisa mentioned, and we're going to see more and more of that. You're going to see more and more partnerships between urban areas and farmers on even buying their crops from them, which will help the farmers as well. So I think you're going to see this partnership continue to grow.
Well, and I think one of the other things that we're starting to pursue is the agriculture auctions mm-hmm. that take place mm-hmm. across the state of Ohio, because at the end of the day, those auctioneers may still have some produce available. And for food pantries to
explain
be able
to – explain how that works. What are they auctioning off?
They're auctioning off their produce. Mm-hmm. The retailers come in and buy the product. But at the end of the day, there's still boxes of cucumbers and tomatoes and so on left. It gives an opportunity for food pantries or food banks to go in and negotiate some pricing, get a good deal. Maybe it's 50 cents a box on whatever's left, and you take it back at that point and move it into the pantry. So I think we all have to get very creative and think out of the box. Mm-hmm. What worked for us in the last 10 years is not working for us today with the greater need that we have. So we got to try a lot of different things to see what works. And if it doesn't work, then we try something else.
Carl, you're on the air on Open Line.
Oh, hi. We had a funny situation happen at a local Panera restaurant in which we went to buy some bread and bagels at 10 after 5 on a Sunday afternoon, and they had closed at 5. As we were leaving, all of the bread and all of the bagels were put into plastic bags, large plastic bags, and dumped into the dumpster. And I pursued it and called a regional office and corporate office, et cetera. And I was told that they have no one to bring it down to the shelters.
Well,
and they just throw it away.
Panera is a very benevolent company. Mm-hmm. They provide goods at the end of the day for any agency, any nonprofit agency who is willing to come on a regular basis and pick product up. Many times, there's an awful lot of bread in Central Ohio. There's tons of bread. And sometimes a lot of the agencies are overrun with bread, and you can only give out so much. Many times, some of the people who are scheduled to pick up bread at each of the individual Panera sites, Monday through Sunday, something's come up, and you may see that occasionally. But for the most part, most of the Panera breads that we deal with all have someone scheduled to pick that bread up and get it to people who really need it. If there's a situation of a particular Panera, a call to a local food pantry might be able to set up a volunteer schedule to help with that.
That's how you get the bread from the Panera or another restaurant.
Absolutely.
It's through volunteers. That's another way to volunteer.
It's another way to volunteer.
What we end up doing from the food bank is because we don't really want that bread coming back to the food bank, because by the time it gets to us and then gets back out to an agency, it's not worth giving to anybody. So what we do is what we call an enabling program, where we'll try to find – somebody calls and identifies us, this caller just did, and we find out where it is. We will try to link up with the closest food pantry or a pantry that says I'm in need of bread, you know, or an agency, and then we'll do a linkage program. And then, as Barb said, you know, that works as well as the management team at the store and the volunteers. And at times with volunteers, Sunday afternoon at 5 o'clock is probably a little more problematic because the agencies aren't open at that time other than some of the soup kitchens, and they have regular supplies of people bringing food into them as well. So it's that kind of challenge. It's a volunteer-driven system, as is all of our – one of the amazing things about this entire network of agencies that we have throughout Ohio and in the country is that these are basically run by volunteers, and they do a phenomenal job day in and day out on the front lines. And I can't give those folks enough credit for what they do, because it wouldn't matter how much food we find at the food banks or what Lisa's able to do from a state level, if the agencies weren't there day in and day out doing what they're doing and trying to do that with volunteers on a regular basis, we wouldn't be able to get nearly the food out that we're able to do.
I think one of the things that so enjoyable in working together is that collaboration and partnership is a key aspect in the food net that we're trying to establish both in Central Ohio and I know in other places around the country. It's a phone call to Barb or to Matt or to one of our colleagues. If we have an oversupply of bread, as an example, then we have a network of local food pantries as well that we will call to make sure that we can be as good as stewards as possible with the distribution of supplies that we can receive.
You know, it was interesting. Last year, we got a call from a farmer down in a couple counties south of here, and the gentleman said, "Barb, I've got some corn to donate." And I said, "That's wonderful." He said, "I have 600 dozen." Well, I don't know about you guys, but I wasn't sure how many, 600 dozen, how big a pile that was. Well, we had enough to serve a lot of the smaller food pantries along the south end of Columbus and even up into the university area. And so to Scott's point, we all, if we have an abundance, we always share.
So how did that work? I'm going to try to picture how that worked.
It was like four different pickup trucks filled to the peak.
Ears of corn.
Ears of corn. Big bags,
calls.
50 dozen bag, 50 dozen ear of corn in a bag. They were quite heavy, but now I know what 600 dozen ears of corn.
So it was served as corn on the cob?
Corn on the cob. Absolutely. The families love getting the fresh produce.
And it's fresh that you're going to get. I mean, one of the beauties of our produce program with the Ohio farmers and growers that we have is that, you know, this is straight from the field. It doesn't get any better in terms of quality and freshness. And, I mean, it really is top-notch product. So we've been lucky to have that kind of partnership with farmers for a long time.
Okay. Diane has another interesting idea. Go ahead, Diane. You're on Open Line.
Hi. I'm wondering if any of the food banks have ever considered pairing up with Hunters and seeing if they could donate the catches that they receive or get.
There's a national program called Hunters for the Hungry, and we've had a lot of deer meat because of that. It's amazing how many different ways you can prepare deer meat, and how many we've had wonderful. The processors are donating the processing costs to do that, so we get it. You know, whenever somebody wants to do that, we capture it. Even some of the metro parks, when they have to call the deer that are in, otherwise it's not healthy for the deer, let alone the plants in the parks. We end up, they process all that, and it looks little sausage rolls of deer meat. So there has been a program for a long time. It's not as big here, obviously, as it is in the in the western states, but it's something that we gladly take advantage of whenever offered, and the clients that, are served by the pantries really enjoy getting that type of product.
It's making it into stews, and you mentioned sausage, that kind of thing.
Sausage, yeah. Most of it comes, they try to process it into a sausage for us.
Well, it opens a new opportunity for local pantries as well as to provide additional nutritional information and cooking tips and those types of things, because a lot of our clients are city folk. And I don't know how else to describe it. They wouldn't know what to do with venison or wild fowl or those types of things because they had never been exposed to it. So it takes some coaching. It takes some training. And and some of the services we're looking at locally is to increase the amount of literature and training that we can provide that provides both nutritional tips but also just cooking tips, because so many of the foods are instant, you know, instant ready, pop in the microwave for 2 minutes. And last time I checked, you can't fix venison like that, right?
I wouldn't recommend it.
From TV dinners with deer meat. Thanks, Diane. Appreciate
Thank
the call.
You.
Take care. Just a couple of minutes left. You mentioned the Farm Bill, Matt, at the start of the show. Any additional government help coming that we see?
The Section 32 monies, I think, have shown up. We just got an allocation of $300,000 to buy some additional – pick some additional products.
Which Section 32 is
– It's a federal – Lisa probably explained it better than I can. But it's a federal program that's really given us another additional source of funding.
Mm-hmm. It's a source where a third of all customs receipts that are taken in by the federal government are deposited, and the Secretary of Agriculture has the discretion to use those funds to clear – any agricultural products that are in surplus. As Matt said, we've had a nice increase in the TFAB program, the Emergency Food Assistance Program, which is our government commodities program. I would like to say that we are working now with the Strickland administration and members of the General Assembly. We have asked for an emergency appropriation of $6 million that would fill about 65% of the gap that we have identified, which is nearly 27 million pounds of food that we need, and would ask your listeners, if they are so inclined, to pick up the phone, call their state representative, call their state senator or Governor Strickland, and urge his support for this modest request.
I think this is another illustration of where the emphasis on it takes everybody to participate. The government alone won't be able to resolve this crisis. Food pantries and food banks and social service agencies alone won't do it. The church alone won't do it. Schools alone won't do it. Businesses alone won't do it. But collectively, as we collaborate and partner within our community, we can have and are having a substantial impact on the issue. And so I would encourage all the listeners, as well as don't wait for the government to do it. Connect with your local food pantry or the local food bank and get involved and participate.
Just a couple of minutes left. I wanted to get some takes on Barack Obama. Last week was in Zanesville at a food pantry, I believe. He called for an expansion of what President Bush has started with the faith-based organizations. I wanted to get your thoughts on that. Barb, you must be in support of that, I would guess.
I would be in support of that. The faith-based initiatives typically in the government benefit a lot of the smaller faith-based agencies and so on. Some of the larger ones, we would like to participate more in some federal assistance so that we can expand our programs across the state and across the country. The church is where it is. You know, feeding myself is a material question. Feeding my neighbor is a spiritual one, I think it was once said. And that's true. And the more we can get assistance from the government can't do it all. Faith-based initiatives can't do it all. But together with the community and the partnerships, like Scott said, that's where we're going to make the biggest dent. And we're looking to make a big dent as the problem continues to grow. Any dent we can make is a positive one, and certainly working with the government, Lutheran Social Services looks forward to that.
I think one of the beauties of the entire food banking movement has been it really is about collaboration and partnerships. It's about how we bring together and not create separate programs. So there's not a separate – in some states there's a separate TFAT program that has its own distribution mechanism. And in our case here, we've tried to bring the farmers, the growers, the food industry itself – the government programs and the community through food drives and faith-based. I think if I remember my numbers right, 70% of our agencies are faith-based. So they're in the game. They've been in the game.
Yeah, it's a grassroots movement.
That's exactly right.
So you're looking not at necessarily, you know, what denomination is on the sign outside. It's just what they're doing inside to help the hungry.
Correct.
Okay, that's going to wrap it up for this hour of Open Line. My thanks to our panel, Barb Packer, the Director of Food Pantry Services for Lutheran Social Services, Scott Marrier, who directs the Westerville Food Pantry, Matt Habash, the President of the Mid-Ohio Food Bank, and Lisa Hamler-Fugit, Executive Director of the Ohio Association of Second Harvest Food Banks. Thanks very much. I hope it's a big problem. 52, 54 minutes. We're not going to solve it, but hopefully we gave people some ideas. Up in the next hour, some ideas on traveling without losing your wallet at the gas pump, something we could all use this summer. You're listening to Open Line on listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820, NPR News.